It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
Yes, it is. Up next, I have my weekly chat with the Green Party co-leader James Shaw. Today, we spoke about the Greens' amendments to the Teacher De-escalation Bill. We also spoke about the Gender Pay Gap Action Plan and also the Progressive New Housing Project. So let's get into it. The Education and Training Bill, which hopes to modernise and strengthen the education system, the Greens have secured some amendments to this bill. What are these amendments and why was it important to push for them?
The amendments that we were getting were around some language that had been in the draft bill around, sort of described it as the use of force. For teachers who need to restrain, pupils who are in a, maybe in a highly distressed state. And the countervailing view of this was from the disabilities community and from parents who have got kids who have got autism and other sort of cognitive diversities. And there have been some real horror stories in the past around this, and so what we wanted there was a modification to lay out more clearly that it's not about force but about restraint where absolutely necessary in a way that protects the child. And so that all kind of went through. We had sort of negotiations between various people from disabilities community and from parents with kids with cognitive diversities. And teachers' unions, and with the Minister of Education, Chris Hipkins, and worked through it and got those changes.
And last month, the Council for Educational Research Study released statistics that 1 in 4 teachers feel unsafe in the classroom, which is an increase from the last survey in 2016. What do you think accounts for this rise, and is this bill a response to such concerns?
Well, the bill is an overhaul of our entire way of running the education sector. It's a repeal and replacement of the existing Education Act. This is one aspect of it, and certainly the language that was in there was a response to teacher concerns about feeling unsafe, which is entirely understandable because they are not resourced to be able to deal with these kinds of situations very well. And it's a function, of the squeeze on schools and on teachers. What our view was is that actually that's the problem that we should try and deal with to make sure that actually teachers do have the resources and the training and the support to be able to deal with these situations, and that parents and students are similarly resourced to try and lessen the chances of those kinds of incidents from happening. But the language that was in the original bill was a real concern of us because it didn't deal with that kind of central problem. It sort of was more the kind of ambulance at the bottom of the cliff, if you like, approach, and we wanted to try and deal with the source of that issue.
How does a change in rhetoric result in actual change in the room?
Well, it's not rhetoric, it's the law, and so it does. Changes in language in legislation make a significant difference, both in terms of how the public service then responds, so they then have to interpret that and go and apply that, and then of course that does lead to changes and eventually in the classroom, but also it leads to changes in the courtroom. If there are cases that end up in court, which is the worst possible outcome, but occasionally these things do happen, the difference between one word and another word for a judge is, and for the lawyers who are contesting the case can be very significant, and so for us that was why we wanted to make sure that we got that change in there.
So let's move now to the Gender Pay Gap Action Plan. Last week, not only was the biggest drop on the gender pay gap recorded in 17 years, which is wonderful, but the Equal Pay Amendment Bill was passed with unanimous support. Can you give a brief overview of what this bill is and what it means going forward?
Well, the Equal Pay Amendment Bill, as the clue is in the title, is an amendment to the original Act that's been on our books for some time. And whilst there has been progress, clearly we're not there yet. And there is still a gap between, on average, what men are paid and what women are paid for, either for the same work or for very similar categories of work. And it's around that second thing that was the most significant component, which is that we've had these cases in recent years where a profession that is dominated by women gets paid less than a profession that is dominated by men, even though you could argue quite strongly that those two professions are equivalent in terms of, for example, the level of skill or the level of challenge and so on that they require. And so part of the gender pay gap is about what happens between professions as well as what happens within them. And so whilst we may have made some progress, for example, on closing the gap within a profession, there are still some very big gaps between professions, and that's what leads to the average gap between men and women still being there.
Mm. Most people who suspect or know they are being paid less due to arbitrary differences do not formally complain. Will this amendment bill make the complaint process easier?
Yes, we hope that it does. It does kind of streamline some of those processes as well.
How does this bill acknowledge and mitigate ethnic pay disparities within gender? For example, the difference in pay between Wahine Māori and Pākehā women?
Well, what it does is it sort of extends and clarifies that principle that has always been there since we got the original legislation through however many years ago that was, I think 40 years ago, that says that actually people deserve to be paid the same amount for the same work or the same type of work, regardless of their gender or background. And we've made some progress, but, you know, it's kind of gotten to a point now where there are areas where the existing law didn't, you know, provide that ability for people to take cases. Or if they did take cases, there was some fuzziness there, which meant that the court system wasn't able to respond. And so it should ensure, or it should provide pathways, rather, for either individuals or unions who are taking cases on behalf of a group of workers should be able to have legal recourse to say, hey, look, this principle is it does apply across the board, and here is another case where we can close that gap.
Let's move now to progressive home ownership. This project was announced in September of 2019 and it was officially launched last week. What's the first step? What's the priority now that this progressive home ownership is now launched?
Yeah, so this has been quite a big deal for the Green Party. It was in our confidence and supply agreement. It has been quite a complicated program to get off the ground. And what it does is it builds on the very good work that organisations like the Housing Foundation, Habitat for Humanity, the Salvation Army have done over a number of years, which is to get lower income families who would basically have no chance of putting together a deposit and getting their own home, to give them a pathway where they work with that agency over a number of years, essentially a portion of their rent goes into building up equity in a house, a number of different ways of doing it. And so the first step really last week was to say that there would be about 10% of the $400 million fund that we've got is going to the first two providers, one in Queenstown, one in Auckland, to extend the work that they do to a greater number of lower income families who otherwise wouldn't have a chance of owning their own home. So it's a really big announcement for us, because it sort of says, okay, whilst we had this in our confidence and supply agreement and whilst there was money allocated in the budget, it's now actually at the point where it's going out the door and, we know that there's going to be a material impact on people's lives. It is just the start of the program, however. This, I think the announcement last week was only about just over $40 million of a $400 million fund. And so what I'm really excited about is to see what happens next. Because we should really be scaling up pretty dramatically, and it should make a difference to the lives of hundreds and hundreds of families around Aotearoa.
And what are the main differences between the Progressive Home Ownership Project and Kiwi Build, which seemed to be the government's main plan on mitigating the housing crisis?
Oh, it actually isn't. The government's main program on mitigating the housing crisis is to build state homes, and to which I think when we took over we had something like 63,000. Now there's over 70,000 state homes, and we've got the biggest public housing program going on in decades and decades and decades, and that really helps to take some of the heat out of the market. Kiwi Build is actually just a component of it, and it's really designed specifically for first home buyers, but these are people who would in normal circumstances be able to get into the housing market but actually just can't because the market itself is so busted. The progressive home ownership is targeted specifically at lower income families, and these are people who even under the best circumstances would really struggle to put together a deposit for a house. So they're quite different programs, and they're quite, and they're designed to deal with different parts of the housing market. So the government's housing program has many features, one of which is progressive home ownership, one of which is Kiwi Build, one of which is the public house building program, and so on. And there are others as well, which are to kind of, for example, free up the space to make sure that actually private developers can, you know, just build more houses and more apartment buildings. And we made some progress on that last week as well, with changes to building regulations, which should mean that there are more, particularly more apartments in high-density areas in our central business districts around New Zealand, that we're able to get more of those up and running as well. But I think it's really important to note that Kiwi Build is just one part, and frankly a fairly small part, of what is a massive housing program right across the sector, to deal with basically every single part of what is a very busted marketplace.
So is there anything else you'd like to add on any of the topics we spoke about this morning?
No, just to say that we had a really great weekend launching our campaign for the next 8 weeks, including our manifesto, which is a 50-page document of people can take a look at it and see what kind of government they're going to be getting, as well as our ad that I'm hoping that people will see on their screens soon.
That was James Shaw for the Green Party. The Wire.